This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, with 2010 London Symposium. Proposition. I love being a philosopher. What I think counts. I love being a philosopher. What I think counts. Now, are the ideas you have in your mind ideas that count? Are the ideas every moment of your life of things that are important that count? This morning we were discussing about listening to the radio and how the radio and television and the media bring all sorts of things to our mind, bring all sorts of things into our heart, and bring all sorts of things to us that are not necessarily beneficial, not necessarily something that we want to tell other people about, and yet we listen to it. We listen to it. We give it time in our life. We give it time in our thought system. And as we give it time in our thought system, what happens? It takes time. It takes time in our thought system. Now, how much time do you have in your day? How much time do we have in our day? We have, so to speak, 24 hours. Okay, now, of these 24 hours, we spend some time eating and sleeping and doing our toilet and so forth. And so then we cut back. So then we have time to go to our job, or we have time to read a book, or we have time to do anything. Now, what is that time? That time is something that is saying, okay, this is all you got. When you use up that time, there's no more. So when today is done, that time is done. And you can never go back. You can never reclaim it. You can never say, I want to get my 40 winks that I missed. I came on the airplane and I didn't fly. I did fly. I didn't sleep. I didn't sleep on the plane very much. I'm sure I slept some. But I didn't sleep a nice full 8 hours or that I would like to have. And so I was having all sorts of busy ideas. And so I was writing on my computer, and I was working on my projects and things like that. And then I was meditating, and I was having all sorts of good ideas and good thoughts and good imagination. And as I was having these things, I wasn't tired. In fact, I wasn't even tired to lay back and go to sleep. But I said, no, come on, go to sleep. You know, it's nighttime. You should really be sleeping, you know. And so I laid back and tried to sleep and slept a little bit. But my mind was just so filled with wonderful ideas. They were not sleepy ideas. They were just awake ideas. And these awake ideas wanted to be thought about. They wanted to be written down. So I wrote some of them down. I took out my computer and I started writing these things down. And I was writing them down and writing them down, and they were just flowing, just really beautiful. And it was the outline. I had written outlines for this seminar that I'm giving now three or four times. and each time I set it aside because it wasn't really what I wanted to say. It wasn't really what was in my heart. But on the way on the plane, what was really in my heart started to come out just beautifully. And so I was writing it down and bringing it here for you guys. And it's a wonderful thing, but once it was done, it was over with. Once it was done, it was past. You can't go back and retrieve it, even if you want to. You can't go back and retrieve it. You can't retrieve yesterday. You can't do something over again. All you can do is something new, something right now, something this moment. So, what are we doing this moment? Are we living in paradise this moment? Are we living in our highest and best right here, right now? And the answer is, that's up to us. And it's not a matter of the house we live in, the clothes that we have, the associations that we have. It's a matter of what's going on in our inner thinking. What is going on in your inner thinking? Is your inner thinking so busy about all the projects that you should be doing or you should be working on or you should be thinking about instead of sitting here talking in this lecture, in this seminar? A lot of people do that. They think about all the things that they should be doing. They should be doing their job. They should be doing this. When a kid skips school, and he goes to the movie instead. In the movie, does he worry about school? No, he's just concerned about the movie. He gives himself 100% to the movie and has a great time. And when the movie is over, then he goes back and does whatever he does without any remorse. Now, should he have remorse? Oh, yes, he should, because he should have been in school. He skipped school. He did. That's what you say. What does he say? No, he didn't have any. And if he goes home, and his mother says, shame on you. You should have stayed in school. You should not skip school. You should not go to a movie in the middle of the day instead of going to school. You shouldn't do that. And, okay, Mom, you know. So you told me what you wanted to tell me. I did that because I wanted to. Now, I could say to you, in school, they were going to have this program all about death and dying and war and violence, and I just really wasn't up to that. I really wasn't into that. But that's part of your learning in school. That's part of what you have to do. You have to be there to learn those things and take to understand that history and so on. But Mom, it just didn't make me very happy. Well, you have to do things at times that don't make you happy. You have to do that. And you see, we tell, it just reminds me of one of my students. I've told you about him before. He told his son, he says, I notice you're playing in your room, and his son was a teenager. I notice you're playing in your room, and you're not going out with your friends lately, you know, for the last week or so. You've been in the house more, and you haven't been playing with your friends. Go play with your friends. Oh, okay, Dad. So he went out, and then he came back in a little while later. His father says, well, you didn't go playing with your friends. No, I didn't feel like it. Why? You should go play with your friends. You should get out and mingle. You should do... Dad, they're onto drugs, and I don't want to have anything to do with drugs. And if I'm with them, they want to try to get me to try drugs and stuff, and I don't want to be, encouraged to do something I don't want to do. Dad, I just don't want to do that. You know, get off my back, Dad, get off my back. And so Dad said, oh my God, here I'm shoving my kid into something I definitely don't want him to experience. Him. And here I'm pushing him into it. And I said, why don't you go play with your friends? Go play with your... And he's a teenager, he's made up his own mind. But he didn't want to be mucking around with drugs. Now, his friends were. Now, there's nothing wrong with drugs, and there's nothing right with drugs. There's nothing wrong with bad language, and there's nothing right with bad language. There's nothing wrong with negative thoughts, and there's nothing right with negative thoughts. All of life is filled with whatever it is that we choose to spend our time with. Now, what do you choose to spend your time with? Do you choose to spend your time with those things that are supportive of your own inner awareness, your own inner consciousness of who you believe you are? Or are you going to spend your time doing things that are expected of you by society, expected of you by your community and your church and your family? This is what most of us do. Most of us do things that we're expected to do, and we're not very happy by it. And sometimes we get so jaded by it, we get so accustomed to doing it, that we think that we have to do it. There's no other way. We just have to do it. Like the children, mother takes them to church, and they say, Mom, I don't want to learn about hell and damnation. I don't want to learn about all that fire and all that sort of stuff. And that's not any fun. That's not really where I'm at, because I went to Sunday school. I went to Sunday school in that church, that same church. And in Sunday school, they said, Jesus loves the little children. And then you go in church and you hear the minister saying that hell and fire and damnation and stuff like that. And I don't understand that. Mom, I don't want to go to church. I don't want to hear that stuff. I don't want to hear that stuff. And what happens, the mother says, well, now you should go to church. Family always goes to church together, and we put on our good clothes and we sit there and we listen to the minister and we say, Amen, Amen, yes, I agree with you. And we don't really agree with him. But the thing is, we do so many things in this life. We force ourselves to do so many things that are not really harmonious with us. And then we wonder why we have a negative attitude toward a lot of things in life. We force ourselves to think these things. Now, what should we be doing? What should we be doing? We should be saying, all right, son, you're right. I have been reading some very good books on philosophy, on the Bible, and Jesus, and on our faith, and let's read them together. So, next Sunday, we're going to have church service here in the house. And next Sunday, you're going to be the altar boy. You're going to light the candles for our church service right here in our house. And you, sweetheart, my daughter, you're going to be the flower girl. You're going to put the flowers all nicely around the altar for our service. And I am going to give the talk, and Daddy is going to pick up the collection plate. Daddy's going to pick up your offerings. Oh, good. We're still going to give offerings. Well, sure. We give it to our own church here. And so then Mother gets up there and gives her talk. And Mother says, Jesus loves the little children. Hey, that's nice. That's nice. That's what we heard in Sunday school, too. Well, why did Jesus love the little children? And then the mother begins to tell the children and Daddy and herself why Jesus loved the little children. Jesus loved the little children because the little children were so open and receptive to the divine within themselves. And they knew always the right thing to do, and they knew always the wrong thing to do. And they could make a choice. It wasn't that they only knew the right thing. They knew the wrong, too. But they made a choice. And they made that choice because that was the thing that was so important to them. And they were absolute, fantastic philosophers. They were beautiful philosophers because Jesus was a philosopher. Jesus looked at the humanity and he says, how can I tell humanity that within them is their divinity? How can I tell humanity that within them is all good? How can I tell humanity that every man, woman, child, every object that lives on the face of the earth is good and very good? How can I tell that to my children, my family? And so she's giving her talk. She's giving her sermon. And she speaks to her family. And she is a loving, loving, and wonderful, wonderful mother. Just so super. And the father is supportive of that. And the children are supportive of that. And after her service on Sunday, home church, home school, home church, And so after her service, the whole family gathers together and they have a big om together and they say, I like me, I like me, I like me. And then the kids go out to play. And the neighbor kids say, hey, I didn't see you in church today. And, no, we had church at home. Church at home? How did you have church at home? Well, Mother was the minister. She gave the talk. Daddy took the offering. I was the altar boy. I lit the candles, and my sister, she put the flowers all in place, and we just had a wonderful service and wonderful talk. Mother just told us all the wonderful things about God. What a wonderful God we have, and what a wonderful divine being, and that God lives inside of us. God lives in our heart. God lives in us, and God loves us, and God is so... Oh, hey, do you think your mom would allow us to come to your church on Sunday? And, why don't you ask your mom if she would let you come? Because you got to get permission from your mom, because your mom is, the boss. She runs the show. And so the other children in the neighborhood, they ask their parents if they can come to this church of Johnny's mother. And so they come to the church of Johnny's mother. And Johnny's mother gives them, now she's inspired. All the neighbor kids are in there. And she says, this is wonderful. Now, God is good. And so she starts telling the stories that Jesus told. She starts telling all the stories that he told, and in her own understanding of them, and in the modern day parlance, And so they're listening, and they're saying, wow. And then they're saying, Mom and Dad, you should go with us. You should come with us, She's such a good minister. She's so wonderful. Well, why not, I didn't know that you had to have a special membership or special license to be a minister to talk, you know, that anybody can be a minister and talk, you know, and it's true. But the church doesn't have any name except Johnny's church, you know, Johnny's mommy's church, you know. And so pretty soon the adults in the community begin attending. And that little conclave of people is such a foci, a focus point of love, unconditional love. And it grows and it grows. And then as the kids go to school, the other children in school say, "Hey, I didn't see you in church on Sunday." And they say, "No, we went to Johnny's mother's church." You know, "Oh, where's that?" "Well, in her home. And she was the minister. And she gave the talk." And wow, wasn't that nice, you know? And then we had cookies afterwards and ice cream too. Now, whoever had ice cream at church on Sunday, you know, after Sunday service, wow, that was so good. Wow. And, you know, our mothers and fathers, they were smiling after church. They were happy after church. They weren't sad because they had been so told that they were bad by the minister. They weren't sad. They were happy. And it was a great and wonderful experience. "You want to come?" And pretty soon the whole community comes into her living room and sits on the floor and enjoys the wonderful service and the altar boy and the flower girl and the person who took the offering. Who is that?
Father.
Daddy. Father, yeah. And hey, wasn't that wonderful? Now, you see, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I kind of think it happens more often than we know. More often than we know. But people don't make a big noise about Mama being a minister, you know. Although you drive down the roads in California and in the United States, and every once in a while you look up there and you see Jenny Barnes, who's the minister, or Jacqueline Pickley, who's the minister of something of the church, and women who are ministers of these churches, and big churches, real big churches. Fantastic. Yeah. Now, why not? Why not? Now, it's not that you have to be a woman to be sensitive and to be caring and to recognize that the unconditional love of the infinite universe is all for everybody. You don't have to be a woman to recognize that. You can be a man, you can be a child, you can be everything that's good, but the thing is, when you start putting that cause in motion, when you start putting that desire in motion, when you start putting that type of philosophy in motion, then great and wonderful things happen. The whole world makes a big switcheroo, a big change, and everything begins to become so harmonious and so supportive. It's really wonderful. Now, can you do that?
Yes, I am.
I am. Now, Sybil does it in her home. She has her church in her home, and she gives her talk. Now, does Sybil tell her congregation how bad they are? Does Sybil tell her congregation how ungracious they are and how mean and hateful they are and how hell, fire, and damnation is going to take over because they're not listening to the God within them? She doesn't say that, does she? She just say, "I love you. You're so wonderful. You live from the divine within your heart. You live from the purity of your being. You live from the magic of your soul. And oh, when I get near you and feel the magic of your soul, I feel so good. I feel so wonderful." You know, it's true. It's true. Now, do people want to come back and hear it again? Mainly the children want to come back and hear it again because they like that kind of church. They like that kind of talking by adults of unconditional love. And there's not one mention of the problems of the church, because there are no problems in the church. Why? It's her church. It's her church. Nobody else's. They may attend her church and delight in her church, and then what do? They go home and have their own church. Now, what church do they have when they go home? They have the church that they have learned by association. They have learned through association with you what a beautiful church really can be like and what it really is like. And so all the little girls begin to get up and be ministers, because in Nigeria, men are quite prominent in the church organizations and in the things, and the women are a little reluctant. They sit back, only because the women haven't taken it on. The women really run the show. They really take care of everything. They really do everything, and they make the men think that they're doing it. But they do it. Because if it weren't for the women, the men wouldn't have any pants. You know? If it weren't for the women, the men wouldn't have a house or a home to be in. So the woman really plays a most wonderful role. And not that she's better than anybody else, or not that she's indisposable or indispensable. She is a woman, and she is a person who just says, if you don't like it, I do. That's all that matters to me. I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm being divine for me. I'm being divine for who I am. Now, can you say that? Can you understand that?
Yeah.
Now, when you go into your office, you know, she goes to this hospital where she says she works, and I think she goes there to play. But she goes to this hospital, and when she goes in this hospital, she enters her church. That's her church, and that's her congregation. Now, she greets her congregation differently. Her associates, like the flower girl and the altar boy and so forth, you greet them. They are maybe your secretary, and maybe they're your other nurses and things in the hospital. But as you deal with them, what are you doing with them? You are showering them with your unconditional love. And they don't know what's happening to them. All they know is, they feel so good. They feel so wonderful. They go about doing their job efficiently, joyously, harmoniously, and all of the patients that they go in and have anything to do with, they all feel 100% better because of these divine people, each one. And so Chrissy says, you know, it's fun being a minister, but I shouldn't be so selfish. I should not be so selfish being a minister. And so what I'm going to do, each day when I go to my job, to my work, to my church, I'm going to have a special service. Just as I walk in the door of the hospital, I have a special service, 2 instants long. And in that service, I'm going to say, I ordain each a member of my staff this day as a minister of God within. I ordain each member of my staff this day as a minister of God within. I ordain each member of my staff today as a minister of the Church of God within. And each member of my staff goes out and talks to the other members of the members, talks to their congregation, which is the patients in the hospital. And of course the doctors are part of your staff, and the nurses and the administrators and the supervisors, they're all part of your church now. They're ordained. Now you see them acting as a minister with each person, not like the standard minister you know about, but like the minister that you are, that's just unconditionally loving of everybody and everything. Now, as they go in and wait upon their congregation, and they talk to their congregation, and their congregation is out picturing something that is needs attention. And so they say, I will not look at the evidence. I will look at the truth about you. The truth about each patient, each member of my congregation here in this hospital, that you are whole and perfect now. That you live in your ideal spirit, mind, and body. that I surround you as a minister of divine within me with my pure white light of love, and with that pure white light of love, I see each one of you pick up your bed and walk. Perhaps you better leave your bed there. It belongs to the hospital. But get out of here and go home and
yeah,
dance.
Take your cloak.
Right. We'll call you a cab. Now, are you ready to go?
Done.
Well, you see, now, you do that every day. Every day, you ordain your ministers new, not that the ordination doesn't stick, but you are ordaining them new. And pretty soon, you'll walk into that hospital and you won't ordain them anymore, because you will have ordain them so completely that you only can think of them as being ordained ministers. Now, what is an ordained minister? An ordained minister is a person who has decided to follow a particular philosophical concept. An ordained minister is a person who's decided to follow a particular philosophical concept. And the philosophical concept might be Jesus. It might be Muhammad, you know. It might be Buddha. It might be whoever, you know. It doesn't matter. It might be Sibyl Gabua. It might be Christy. You think it might be Christy?
Me, I am.
Yeah, yes. No, I'm talking about everybody else following Christy.
A reflection of me.
A reflection of you.
Might be personal to the individual.
Yes. Until they begin recognizing their divine, and then they follow themselves.
Yes.
But you see, first we have to have a leader like Jesus to lead us into the philosophy. And then we have to apply the philosophy ourselves. And when we apply the philosophy ourselves, then Jesus goes out the window. Mm-hmm. Because he's got other flocks to take care of. He's taken care of us already. He has shown us the way. Now, it doesn't mean that Jesus is so good, but he's just a good teacher. And he is so good. I don't mean to belittle him in the slightest. He is so good. But only you can do your job. And only you can go into your church, into your congregation, and ordain each one to be a minister to themselves. Now, what would happen if everyone in the world did that? What would happen if every mother, when she woke up in the morning, knowing she's divine, she would wake up and she'd say, "Ooh, a new day is here. Now, I ordain every member of my family as a church of this family, as a minister of this family. I ordain every member of this family as a minister of this family, a minister of this family. And when they leave this house, they are a minister of this family. They represent this family. They represent this philosophy. They represent this teaching that we are unconditional love. They represent that, and they go out and they talk to everybody, and they represent the family. Everybody tells their family, their kids, now you're a representative of our family. When you go someplace and what you do, people are going to say, that's that family that does that, you know? And that's what they're going to say, aren't they? Now, what do you want them to say? That it's good and very good? Yes. Now, how are they going to say it's good and very good? Because it is good and very good. Can you do that? Sure. Do you want to do that? Sure. Does it sound like a lot of fun? Sure. Do you think that the children going to the church in their own living room or family room or recreation room or whatever, or in the back yard or whatever it is, doesn't really matter, underneath the chestnut tree or something, you know? And so then they're having their service and all the neighbor kids going, "Hey, come on and play. Hey, I got church first. I'll be a little while. You want to come too? Come join us?" Why not? Sure. What the heck? See what you're doing, you know? And so they come and join, and they see what's happening. And they say, "Man, I never heard a minister talk so beautiful like that. I never heard a minister say that we were good. I never heard a minister say that we are blessed, that we are wonderful, that we are good beyond all imagination, that there is nothing in this world that's more beautiful than we are. Minister says that we're fantastic. And the minister of the church that I go to, he doesn't say that. He says we're sinners, and as sinners, we're going to go to hell. And he didn't even know where hell was. I asked him how to get there, and he says, well, just sin. Well, I didn't think that was very good. I want to know how to get there. I want to go and see what the hells look like, you know, and see if I want to go there. Maybe I want to go there. Maybe it'd be kind of fun to be in hell. But minister doesn't tell him how to get there. He just tells him what happens when you get there. So now, what are we going to do? What are you going to do? How are you going to handle this? How are you going to work on these things? Are you going to be a great, wonderful philosopher? Or are you going to be a wamby-pamby, maybe, and let other people push you around? Are you going to let other people tell you that you've got to do this? You've got to do that? They send pictures around of these little children who have hair-clipped lips, you know, and they say, send money so we can give them an operation. Well, my goodness sakes, when you see a child like that, instantly take him to the hospital and let him have a proper operation so that he can straighten it out for them and it's over with. And how many kids are there who have that? And there's not that many. But give them the operation right away. And there's no money involved. The hospital pays for it. That's what the hospitals are for. They're making money. And they shouldn't be a corporation that make money and give the money to their profit-making organization. It's supposed to be non-profit. And the government helps to pay these things. And that shouldn't be a matter of getting offerings from people to pay for, because that's putting a negative concept up there. Put a picture of a happy child up there and say, this is the way children of the world are. Happy. This is the way the children of the world are fulfilled. This is the way the children of the world live, redeemed in every beautiful way. Now, how can you do that? Well, you don't do it by putting this hair, pinched nip up there. It looks terrible. And these are ads they put in major magazines. And the amount of money that those ads would cost in those major magazines, they don't have to pay for it. The magazine donates it because it's just part of their, you know, nonprofit thing, their contribution. But it's really stupid, because they're putting into the consciousness of the people children having that problem. Now, rather have pictures of children doing beautiful things, having pictures of children being honorable, having pictures of children, search them out, they're there. A photographer should go searching out all these positive things around the world instead of the negative things. The sordid negative things are difficult to find. Well, the positive things are not difficult to find, but the thing is, you have to realize they are the majority. The positive things are the majority. The lovely things are the majority. And soon you get tired of looking at the majority. You want to look at something different. Well, that's unfortunate. That's unfortunate that you want to look at something that is not pleasant. But you do. You do. I can say categorically, any person who walks into a supermarket, whether it's in Europe, in London, in America, anywhere in the world, as they walk into a supermarket, what do? They look at those magazines that are the yellow journalism magazines that tell about people doing naughty things. And as they look at those things, then there's oftentimes pictures of sex, and there's pictures of this and pictures of that. And they look at that. They're forcing you to see that. They're forcing you to put your attention there. Now, Chrissy, do you think that I can force you to put your hand on that red hot stove, Chrissy? Do you think I can force you to put your hand on that red hot stove, Chrissy?
That's not a red hot stove.
No, you're not holding first. Can I force you to put your hand on that red hot stove? Can I force you to do something that is going to be hurtful to you, damaging to you, that's going to make you unhappy? Can I force you?
It's not your nature.
That's not the point. No, I cannot force you, because you will not do something just because I want you to do it. You do something because you want to do it. You do it only because you want to do it. Now, what do you want to do? You want to be your highest and best. Now, put your hand on that hot stove. Put your hand on that hot stove. Look at those dirty magazines in the drugstores you go by. Look at those magazines at the checkout counter. Look at those magazines and see all those pictures and see all those things. Look at them, look at them, look at them, look at them, look at them. And you'll say, no way, no way. You say I'm going to be forced to do it. I am going to show you. I don't even know they're there. They're all over the place, but I don't even know they're there. I don't even know they're there. I am untouched by it. I am untouched by it. And when I'm untouched by it, I don't even know they're there. It makes nothing to me. And you say, you bring your children through there? Well, if you have taught your children that you don't pay attention to the red hot stove, you don't pay attention to things that are going to hurt you, things that are not beneficial to you, they won't pay attention to it. Now, if you say, don't pay attention to it, they'll look. But if you say to them, you have the choice of having a nightmare and watching a movie that's terrible and then having a nightmare or not having a nightmare. Now, what do you want to have? Oh, I want the nightmare. And you say, okay, go ahead, have the nightmare. So, their choice. So they have the nightmare. And then, again, the next night, you want to watch the movie or have a nightmare? Well, I want the nightmare. And then after a while, it's their choice. You are not telling them what they must do or must not do. You're letting them make their own decision and a few trial and errors, and they decide it's not too cool. It's not too cool. But it has to be a decision on their part where they don't see the dirty pictures anymore. They don't see the angry and the violence and stuff like that. They don't see that. They just don't see it. Now, can children walk through the same experience and have different attitudes? They do, don't they? Sure. So you can take a group of children and you're walking to the zoo, and as you're going to the zoo, then over here, a little rabbit is having bunnies, and you're looking down here, all these little bunnies popping out, you know, and isn't that interesting? And then over here, there's a dog that was hit by a truck, and they threw the dead body off on the side of the pavement, and so over there, that you see that dead dog, and he's sort of rotting. And then over here, something else. Now, the children look at all these things, and then you say to them, hey, kids, look, we can see the zoo. See the elephant there? See him? He's standing right by. And they don't even see the bunny rabbit. They don't even see the dog that was dead by the side of the road. Do you understand? Because their attention is brought to something that's very much more exciting. Now, don't look at that. Don't look at this. But look at this. And this is what training is all about. Look at this. Look at this. So, Chrissy, what do you look at? That which is for my highest and best. Chrissy, what do you look at?
What is for my highest and best?
Always.
Always.
Yeah. And when you look at what is for your highest and best always, then those other things just don't exist. Do you see that dog or that rabbit when you're looking at the elephant?
No.
No, you're looking at the elephant. Your attention is totally on that big old pachyderm. And you look at him and you think to yourself, my goodness sakes, he's a big guy. Hey, he's taller than I am. My goodness. And look at that trunk. And what would you do if you had a nose that long? You know, you'd use it for picking leaves, and you'd use it for all sorts of stuff, picking up straw, and you'd use it for taking a drink through your nose. Well, can you see an elephant trying to get his mouth, his nose out of the way and his mouth down there to drink out of the water? He's trained himself to use his nose. And he doesn't drink through his nose. He fills his nose up with water, and then he puts his nose up here, and he puts the water in his mouth. It's a two-cycle operation. It's not in his nose and then down through his head into his mouth. It's up here. It's merely the reservoir. It's the glass.
The reservoir.
That's his glass. And then he pours that into his mouth, and he drinks. And he has a nice glass full of water. That's a big old glass full of water. But, you know, you don't think of that. Because you just don't think of it. You think an elephant drinks like anybody else with his mouth. But he doesn't. He does, but only after he puts it in his nose to get it to his mouth. Because he can't get his mouth down there because the nose is in the way. You know? Isn't that interesting? Now, think about it. You start telling the children these things, and you start explaining it to them, and here all these things are going on around them that are not necessarily beneficial. And so you say, hey, boys and girls, you see that elephant? Now, you see that nose goes all the way down to ground. There's a reason for that. Anybody know what the reason is? Yeah, that's how he eats with. Well, no, it's not what he eats with. Maybe that's his fork. And he picks up the straw, and he puts the straw in his mouth. But now, how does he get a drink? His mouth is way up there, in the crack by his nose. Or how does he get the water up there? I don't know. Nobody knows. Nobody has thought about it, you know. And you say, well, what do you think his nose might do helping him get a drink? Well, he takes water and puts it in his nose and blows it out at something. Mm-hmm. But he also puts water in his nose and puts it in his mouth and drinks. And that's his glass. That's his bucket that he takes the water up there. And you know what he does with that? He takes the water in his nose and then he puts his all around his body and blows it over his body to cool himself off. He uses it for his bath. That's his shower. And my goodness sakes, did you ever think a nose could be so many things? You know, our nose is kind of limited, but an elephant, wow, hey, that's pretty cool. So, you see, when you make life a thrilling adventure, and you choose those things which are not necessarily good or bad or indifferent, but just those things that are charming, like how an elephant uses his nose, then everything becomes wonderful. You made of the philosophy of life an adventure. A joyous and thrilling adventure. Now, we can forget the word Jesus. Jesus is a good word. We can forget the word Jesus and we can say our name. We can say Christy is the most wonderful leader of spiritual life that anyone could ever have. Or we can say Sibyl. Sibyl is a guiding light in the lives of many people and they don't even know it. And when they realize that she is so wonderful, they think, how can I be just a little bit like that? You know? How can I be just a little bit like that? And then somehow the answer comes to them step by step. Step by step. You are walking along the road by the zoo and you see the rabbits having babies and you see the dog that's dead lying there. And then you look over toward the zoo. That's a step. You look toward, oh, there's the zoo! And oh boy, oh boy. And hey, we're going to the zoo! And you bring their attention. Now, you don't say, don't look here. But you're saying, there's the zoo! And then you say, wow, hey, look at that monstrous elephant over there. Isn't he a big guy? My goodness, if you could ride on his back, you could see all over the city. And if you went through a parade on an elephant, you could see everything. And see, all sorts of ideas that are making beneficial out of what might be not beneficial. The elephant's so big, he can't get through the door. The elephant's so big, he can't do this. The elephant's so big. But the elephant's so big, he can do this, and he can do this, and he can do this. We can always find the beneficial, the blessing, the wonderful things in life if we want to look for it. But if you don't look for it, you don't find it. I love being a philosopher. What I think counts. How I look at the world counts. What I say about life counts. And that's really what it's all about, isn't it? Because that's really what makes everything go around. Have a lovely moment. I'll see you in a second or two. I love you.